Fasten your seatbelts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Rick Ryer in for old Glenn Morberg this week. Today we begin our series of candidate forums leading up to the November 8th election. Wisconsin's 72nd Assembly District covers parts of Wood, Portage, Adams, and Washera counties, including the cities and townships of Wisconsin Rapids, Nakusa, Port Edwards, Wautoma, Coloma, Plainfield, and Saratoga, the last of which has been embroiled in a dispute regarding a proposed 7,800-acre dairy farm. We'll certainly get to that issue today, among others concerning the district and the legislative session to come. But first, let me introduce our guests for the hour. Republican incumbent Scott Krug was first elected to the office in 2010. He is a former law enforcement official, having served with the Juneau County Sheriff's Department and Wood County Jail. He also operated an employment and training company called New Opportunities. In the legislature, Representative Krug chairs the Children and Families Committee, is vice chair of the Environment and Forestry Committee, and a member of the Corrections and Colleges and University Committees. Democrat Dave Gorski grew up in Milwaukee. After receiving his master's degree in K-12 counseling, he spent 2 years as a school counselor in Santiago, Chile. Then he was hired by the Nakusa School District in 1992 as a counselor and drug and alcohol specialist and retired in 2011. Mr. Gorski has been spending much of his time recently advocating for environmental issues, increasing the minimum wage in Wisconsin, public school reform, and aging and disability services. We're looking forward to a lively discussion today about the issues facing the 72nd Assembly District and the upcoming legislative session. As always, we want your voice to be heard. Call us with your questions and comments at 800-780-9742. Again, that's 800-780-9742. Or you certainly can send us a note on our Facebook page, Route 51 Show. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Rick.
Absolutely. Before the program, we flipped a coin to see who would be first to offer his opening statement. Dave Gorski, why do you want to represent the 72nd District, and what qualifies you for the job?
Well, I want to represent the 72nd because I'd like to see Wisconsin be restored to what it was while I was growing up. It was a state that believed and supported public education, our university system, our tech schools. We were a leader nationally in environmental protection. And I feel like instead of moving forward, I believe we're moving backwards. We're the only state in the United States that doesn't fund its state parks. I feel I'm qualified because I've always been a leader. I've been the classroom student council representative. I've been the chairman of the committee, the president of the club, the captain of the wrestling team. I've always ended up in a leadership role. Didn't plan to do it, just kind of happened. So I'm a good idea guy.
Scott Krug, and why do you want to continue representing the 72nd District? And again, what qualifies you for the job?
Yeah, you know, since the election in 2010, I think we've done a decent job in making sure that the committees that I serve on represent the district needs. As a father, as a former law enforcement officer, as a former drug court coordinator, discharge planner, employment and training company owner, and just business owner in general, I think my background and my skill set really lend itself to having a broad, diverse view of the needs of the people of the 72nd District. And I think a lot of the work that we'll talk about today, I think that we've achieved some really great things for the 72nd and Central Wisconsin as a whole. And I think I want to keep going for a few more years. So I came on today just to have a good exchange of ideas and to see where we go.
Okay. Well, in this first segment of the program, I'd like to focus on the environment and water quality, two major issues that are facing the district right now. The DNR is tentatively releasing its draft environmental impact statement at the end of this month for the proposed Golden Sands Dairy in the town of Saratoga, and a tentative public hearing is set for the end of October. Representative Krug, the proposal by the Wasaki family to build the 7,800-acre dairy farm, which would contain 33 high-capacity wells, has faced a lot of opposition from environmental activists, local citizens, your opponent, and you've come out against it as well. Relating to the E. coli outbreak on NEPCO Lake and Lake Waseca, in 2014, a statement you were quoted by the Capital Times as saying, "While I appreciate the openness of the Wasaki family to negotiate on certain aspects of the project, It no longer appears this project is feasible in any form in an area that is so vulnerable for contamination. And I asked the DNR to look into the E. coli outbreak and deny the high-capacity well permits. Now, you've come out against some of your Republican colleagues calling for more regulations and on concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, and giving the DNR more regulatory authority in this area. In fact, the Wisconsin League of Conservation voters put you on their honor roll in 2014 for your efforts.
Right.
How do you envision finding a balance between what is good for the local economy and what is in what is good for the local environment?
Yeah, that's the question. You know, that's something we've been talking about for about four and a half years now, and the town of Saratoga is fit to be time to get an answer from DNR. So we have two separate issues, really. We have the pre-existing issues that we've had in NEPCO and Wasicha and Camelot, Sherwood, Arrowhead, Petenwell. All my man-made area lakes all have these quality issues already. So we've been working the last few years to expand the authority of the DNR to come in and say, we're going to study these individual areas, these individual bodies of water, create individual sets of regulation for the more sensitive resource areas of the state in the bill that we created this last session, to make sure that as industry grows and as Central Wisconsin gets back on track, that as business comes in, we have a guaranteed set of regulations both ways. So business owners can see some certainty and understand the rules of the area they're coming into, and that the environmental groups and the citizens and property owners and everybody else, interested stakeholders, know exactly what those industry standards are and what the DNR is going to do to hold those people to those standards. So this sensitive resource area idea is kind of the wave of the future. Instead of saying one size fits all for regulation, we can go in with the precision of a surgical knife and carve out certain areas for specific regulations, just to those areas' bodies of water and to the watershed itself. Because the pressures in the 14 Mile Creek watershed are totally different than those in the Fox River watershed. So we need to be able to understand that there's differences. And as we go through and do these scientific studies and want to increase the ability for DNR to do more studies, similar to the Little Plover idea, where you go in and you take a good look at the watershed, do an optimization study and say, if we move these 10 wells here, if we move these 5 wells here, we'll decrease pressures on our watershed at the headwaters of this body of water, or will decrease pollution in these bodies of water too. So that individualized approach to regulation is what we're looking for in the next session.
Okay. Dave Gorski, you've been endorsed by the same Wisconsin League of Conservation voters as well as the Sierra Club, John Muir Chapter, and Protect Wood County. Reflecting on proposed dairy, the overall groundwater issue, and your opponent's record, why do they believe you're the candidate of choice?
Well, I think they lost some faith in Scott, to be honest. He did have a groundwater advisory group. There were never any minutes taken. There was no agenda. There was poor continuity from meeting to meeting, and the committee kind of fizzled out in the end. And that's from Bruce Demick, who was on the committee. He went to all the meetings. And so I think they lost a little faith with him there. And also when there was a water bill, 744, if I'm right, a high-capacity well bill.
847. 874.
Sorry, the numbers change a lot. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he voted it out of committee and then voted against it on the assembly floor. And I think most people saw that as a political move, and they lost faith in him there as well.
So, it's an interesting story when you get to AB 874 and the difference between the bill that I wrote, AB 477. In 477, there are certain areas of the state, the sensitive resource areas, where we maintain DNR authority and increase it in certain ways. When you get to AB 874, the benefits of 874 was it left cumulative impact approach up for the entire state of Wisconsin as standard law. So there's benefits to both bills and detractions of both bills. In the end, at 874, we were trying to fight for more study areas. So we were trying to amend it towards the end of the bill and couldn't get more amendments into it. So as a representative of the people of the district who didn't like the bill to start and who couldn't accept the bill even after it was amended, you don't have a choice as their representative to vote for just something you like. You have to vote the way they want it to be voted.
Dave?
Well, he probably shouldn't have voted it out of committee because he kind of gave birth to it. Like I like to say, he was kind of the daddy of that bill, and then abandoned it once it hit the assembly floor.
That's not true. That's a Lee Narrison bill and a Rick Gudex bill, known as the Gudex bill for the entire session. So what we did before and in the committee We added a significant study area, the entire 14-mile creek watershed, which is the town of Rome area. And I think the biggest thing that people don't understand about the amendment at the end of the bill is that 14-mile creek watershed, when we talk about Camelot, Arrowhead, and Sherwood, those are the lakes that have been plagued with blue-green algae issues this entire summer. So as we go through that study component, we give DNR the authority to figure out exactly where those problems are coming from and go to do more studies on the quality and quantity in those areas. So I think people overlook the fact that the entire 14-mile creek watershed was going to be in that study classification along with those other areas in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Brian from Fall Creek has a question about the water issue. Brian?
Hello,
Brian. Can you turn your radio down, please?
Yeah, it is. I apologize. I was at a bit of a disadvantage because your phone line wasn't broadcasting the radio show, so I still had to listen to it. So I apologize. My question is for Mr. Gorski. There's been a lot of this in West Central Wisconsin here where it seems like professional agitators show up anytime a family farm tries to expand. And there's always some neighbors who have legitimate concerns about water table, water levels, water quality. But it seems like what happens is the professional agitators a lot of times, and it seems like sometimes David strikes me as one of them, show up into town and sell fear and anger to the local neighbors and make it so that as a neighbor, why would you risk any potential personal harm when you don't see an immediate personal gain? And so it becomes an easy thing for these local municipalities to really run roughshod over the family farm. And that bothers me because I think what they're selling is they're not helping people understand that the family farm, even if they're incorporated for tax and liability reasons, they're still family farms. There are no more, for instance, no more head of cattle in the state of Wisconsin than there used to be. It's just a lot fewer people own them. And that's because farms have had to expand. They've had to innovate. They've had to grow in order to maintain any sort of profitability. The local family farm has largely gone the way of the dodo because there just was no money to be made in it for a lot of different reasons. And so that's my concern is that David comes from a perspective of, if you dig a hole, you've hurt the mother and basically anti-family farm. But the family farm is where West Central Wisconsin's jobs and economy come from. And so, I just would encourage him to help people understand that without growth in the economy, many of these townships, many of these municipalities, there is no other business than agribusiness. There is nobody adding jobs if a farm doesn't expand. And so you've got to have a legitimate perspective of both, maintaining proper well water, maintaining proper quality, but at the same time allowing the economy to expand in the only way it's possible, which oftentimes in our area is through agriculture and mining.
Dave, would you like to respond?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't call the people of Saratoga and Rome agitators. They're residents of the communities they live in. There's been big investments in vacation homes and retirement homes in the Tri-Lakes area, Lake Sherwood, Camelot, and also on Lake Peatonwell. And so they're not agitators. They care about their communities. We're talking about a potential of 2,000 wells being affected. This is basically a residential area. And we have a unique geology. As Scott said, it's not a one-size-fits-all. Wherever you go around the state, you're going to have a little different situation. Well, we're in the Central Sands. We have a very high water table. We have very porous soil. And our water is at a greater threat of being polluted by nitrates because the water table is so high and the water is so porous. Also, our streams are at threat of losing flow in our lakes in the Central Sands. If you know about the Central Sands, Lake Huron, Wolf Lake, Pickerel Lake, Long Lake, all these lakes have either been almost completely drained or have lost a lot of water, and that affects people's property value. So I'm not an agitator. I'm a concerned citizen, and I don't. From what Scott said, he's almost sounding the same way. So if I'm an agitator, so Scott.
Well, I appreciate. Thank you for taking the time to respond. As I've listened to both of you, what I hear Scott saying is that he is both concerned with the issues of water, but also concerned with the issues of the need for economic expansion, growth, and legitimate free market concepts. I haven't heard that from you. I hear really only one perspective from you.
Well, no, that's not true. Well, because I haven't had a chance.
Well, I think just
Just thank a side you for note. Your time, gentlemen.
Oh, thanks, Brian. I think, you know, just a side note, I think, you know, it's fair to say a few weeks ago I was out to Heartland Farms for an event out there. And, you know, after the dust settles, you start seeing quotes appear on blogs and things like that. And, you know, one of the direct quotes I saw from Dave about Heartland Farms in particular was for, it says, for Scott Kruger to take the sign of polluters against the people of the 72nd District is a further betrayal. It's unfair to call every big operation in the central sands area of the state, especially when, you know, Brian mentions the vast economy is based in agriculture, to call guys like Jeremy Pavelski and Heartland Farms the big polluters of the district doesn't help that cause. So, you know, that those are the things that I think people see, that they, you know, they see the conjecture and they see the, you know, the angst. And, I, you know, we agree 100% in Saratoga. We get it. You know, nobody wants, you know, the Saratoga farm to be permanent in the Central Sands area. But beyond that, there does have to be a balance, and we do have to allow agriculture to be in the Central Sands and to be the base of our economy.
And, Scott, part of a bill that you sponsor that didn't get passed, and I think that we may be referring to that, and I can't recall which one it was.
477.
But it had to do – part of this bill had to do with determining the rate flows of streams and lakes.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't pass. If reelected, would this be something you'd try to put through again, and what would you do this time to get it passed?
Yeah, we haven't stopped the efforts on 477 because, like I said earlier, I think it is the wave of the future for environmental regulation in the state of Wisconsin, understanding some of the constraints that DNR has faced. So I think if we can get staff at DNR to focus in the most problematic areas of the state one section at a time instead of spread out entirely everywhere, I think it just makes more sense. It's what any business owner would do, too, is to say, I need more resources in a certain department. Let's focus over there for a while. So as we get back to session in January, AB 477 will be one of the top priorities. It's already mentioned in the Republican Assembly Caucus forward agenda for the next session to talk about striking that balance and finding the regulation that fits the Central Sands and the Kewaunee area and the Rock County area and certain areas of the state that are all different. And that's what the sensitive resource area concept in 477 does, is it sets these areas apart from each other to say, DNR, we want you to go in and tell us exactly how to deal with these situations in these areas. So it's coming back. I think we need to add a couple more sensitive resource areas and give DNR the opportunity to go in and find where those problems are and how to fix them. Let the science judge what we're going to do.
Dave?
Well, first of all, I'm not against farming. I'm not against agriculture. I just think everybody needs to be a good neighbor. I don't think a family farm, a corporation, one family should profit at their neighbor's loss. I'm looking at the lakes in the Central Sands that have been drained of water. There has been no liability. There's been no accountability for that. So what I'm concerned about is that Scott does take money from Big Ag. I don't. They're not behind me. But the people of Saratoga and the town of Rome and Grand Rapids, they're behind me because they're concerned about the power that the money from Big Ag brings. And I'm not against them. I just want them to be good neighbors. I want them to be accountable and liable. They can farm. They can make the economy go. But they need to be accountable for what they do.
Dave Gorski, if you're elected this fall, mm-hmm. what measures would you take in order to address this issue as far as creating bills, or what kind of legislation would you try to pass or at least try to introduce, and how would you go about doing it?
Well, for one thing, I think we do need to consider the cumulative effects of high-capacity pumping. I think it only makes sense that we protect our water from states like California and Nebraska and Kansas that are in Iowa that are having water problems. We need laws up front so that our farmers have certainty of what is expected of them, but also make sure we're not a target. You know, we're sitting on 20% of the world's fresh water here. We need to be careful. Why not put meters on the wells? Why not use science to determine exactly how much water can be pumped?
I'm glad you like those ideas. That's what's in AB 477 right now.
Well, we have a Facebook comment from Don who says, you know, Scott Krug, a member of your Citizens Groundwater Advisor Committee, have tried to resume meeting in the face of an all-out assault on groundwater, and you've not responded. Questions remain about your vote moving AB 477 out of committee. You've campaigned with the Big Ag-funded LASA opponent Pat Teston. It's clear you no longer ascribe to the middle position, trying to find a groundwater solution that protects all of us. What do you say to your neighbors in Rome and Saratoga who are trying to protect themselves from the proposed CAFO?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I appreciate Don's input and his time on the committee. So basically what AB 477 is, Rick, is basically it's a conglomeration of all the ideas that the Groundwater Advisory Committee put together. Mm-hmm. It's the ideas to keep sensitive resource areas intact, the idea to keep the cumulative impacts in those sensitive resource areas, to deal with the Kona Depression, which Don was very instrumental in bringing to the table. So as we talk to neighbors in Rome and in Saratoga, and we talk about the existing problems we have with our lakes and the idea of the CAFO coming. Everybody knows I don't like the CAFO. We don't mm-hmm. like the farm. The farm isn't something that we want to have happen. But we need to figure out a way to get past the political ideas that, you know, Scott Krug isn't doing anything or trying to help when there's bills on the table that no other legislator in central Wisconsin has written in the last 20 years. I mean, the ideas that they've brought to the table go straight to Madison, right into legislation, and that's what we're working on.
Okay. You're listening to Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg, and we're talking with the candidates for Wisconsin's 72nd Assembly District, incumbent Republican Scott Krug and Democrat Dave Gorski. You can join the conversation at 800-780-9742. Our lines are full right now, and we'll get to those calls after the break. Or you can put a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be right back.
Support for WPR comes from the UW Health Breast Center, providing second opinions for Wisconsin women and men diagnosed with breast cancer. In healthcare, experience matters. More at uwhealth.org/second opinion. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Thanks for joining us on Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer. Today we're talking with candidates for the 72nd Assembly District, Democrat challenger Dave Gorski and Republican incumbent Scott Krug. You can call us at 800-780-9742 to be part of the program. And we're going to go to the phones right now. And John in Grand Rapids has a question regarding, actually directed to you, Scott. John, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi. Just wanted to ask Mr. Krug, in what capacity were you employed in Wood County, and what was your job title, and what department did you work in? Because I don't think you were in law enforcement like you said, like your resume suggests at the beginning of the show.
Okay. Yeah, fair question. In 1999, I started my career with the Juneau County Sheriff's Department as a road deputy for 2 years. Transitioned into the jail in Juneau County, then took a job in the Sheriff's Department with the discharge planner program through a contract company, and then also was the the drug court coordinator also for that contract company, and then as a private contractor with the jail myself.
So you weren't in law enforcement in Wood County?
No, I wasn't in law enforcement in Wood County.
Okay. One quick question. I live in Grand Rapids. About 15 years ago, the city of Wisconsin Rapids built a high-capacity well by Lincoln High School. They told us there'd be no impact, and within the next year, three of my neighbors in my subdivision at that time had to dig deeper wells. Why don't homeowners deserve to be protected in these issues like this farm coming in? Why don't we deserve some protection from the government? And why do we have to spend out of our pocket so someone else can have water?
Nobody's saying that you have to. And I think
if you have to dig a deeper well, sir, that costs money.
Right. So what we're working on in AB 477, and one of the concepts in there, is the private right of action, which gives the individual homeowner the opportunity to not have to go to court to sue a big water user if their water goes astray. In the bill, it also says you get the immediate reparations from that big user of new water. So the requirement that is in the bill that will come back next session is to say, okay, big new user comes in, your well goes bad, you get your water supply right away. But also you have to have a little bit of the responsibility to prove that your well was in proper working order at the time. So what we'd ask people to do in 477 is just have a log of maintenance, of installation, of just, you know, how deep your well is, just some basic, you know, homeowner information that you would have in your well in the first place, just to show to the individual that's supplying the new water supply that you have some skin in the game. So that's all that the 477 would be asking of you.
Thank you, John, for your call. And we go to Grand Rapids once again, and we'd like to talk with Theron. Hi, Theron.
Hello?
Yeah, what is your question, sir? Theron?
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Hi. Hey, I've got a question for Representative Krug about the high-capacity wells. We've been talking about the large-capacity farms and things like that, but I kind of like to steer back toward, you know, our community and maybe find out what Scott perhaps has done to further our interests in our community and our area.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, being a legislator in central Wisconsin, you want to find good economic development opportunities. So we've worked really hard to make sure that Skywards could stay in central Wisconsin, to add, you know, 1,000 jobs to our central Wisconsin economy and up to 2,000 more in the next 10 years. We've worked really hard to make sure that the Sand Valley Golf Resort in Rome is going to be a project for the future of Adams County, to not just necessarily, you know, feed those dollars into Rome, but Adams County as a whole, to provide for the better general welfare of the residents of the county with increasing the tax base. We fought hard for transportation projects. We've got a new business park in Barron because of some of the legislative action we've taken. You know, the list goes on and on. And that's one of the things I wanted to point out, is that as a legislator, you know, some kind of get into that fray, the whole Republican-Democrat type of fray, and, you know, fight over those big issues and try to figure out who's smarter and who's better. I think it's our job to stay above that fray and to work on things that make sense for our local governments. You know, we helped the city of Wisconsin Rapids get some dollars for the riverfront redevelopment project that Zach Verwink's got planned. We've helped get some WEDC dollars to the Port Edwards Mill to get it refaced and repurposed. All of those things go into developing a good place to live, work, and play and stay in central Wisconsin. So those are things that I'm really proud of.
Dave, would you like to comment on that? And thank you so much, Theron, for your call.
Well, as far as economic development goes, I would like to see more WEDAC money, and I know there's plans to do this, to move it away from corporations and move it into communities. Scott mentioned the Tribune 101 project in Wisconsin Rapids. I think that's a good example of community collaboration. They have some business incubation ideas there. I think it's going to be a great thing. I think if we got our community leaders together, our bankers, our architects, our artists, our business people, and have them work with the assets within the community to come up with ideas for expanding business, I think that's a good idea. And along with refinancing $19 billion in student loan debt, which would be a big stimulus for the entire state and the 72nd.
And Dave, you've been a champion for campaign finance reform. That's one of your platform thoughts. And we have a call from Brett in Wisconsin Rapids that would like to talk about that. Brett, go ahead.
Yeah, this is
Can you turn your radio down, please?
Okay.
You're on the air, Brett.
I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. Americans overwhelmingly agree that politicians have become corrupted and bought by their campaign donors and lobbyist influence. Are the candidates in agreement with that sentiment? And if so, what can be done to end this legalized bribery of our candidates and elected officials?
Dave, go ahead.
Well, I'd love to see Citizens United overturned. I don't believe corporations are people. I don't think money is free speech. I don't think greed is good. I think we should care about each other. So we need to overturn Citizens United, and Senator Taylor, I believe she's a senator, she has a bill that would eliminate contributions from corporations and people, for that matter, in the state of Wisconsin. It would be a publicly funded election, and I think that would be great, because you win by knocking on doors, being on programs like this, getting out to public events. Let's get the money out of politics. I just want to say one more thing. In the last campaign, there was a lot of independent spending going on. They ran a very it was basically a lie about Dana Duncan, saying that he defended a pedophile. Well, he was a public defender. He had to take that case. I hope Scott and his supporters don't do that to me in the last 2 weeks of election, where I can't respond because I don't have the money and don't know it's coming.
Scott.
Sure. You know, and independent expenditures are always something that campaigns wish they had a little more control over, because we don't. We don't get to coordinate. So, you know, when the independent guys come in and spend those dollars, it's a crapshoot for both of us. And when they put some of that stuff out that's so incendiary, it doesn't help me. It kind of hurts me a little bit, actually. So, you know, I kind of wish that there was the ability to have some more control over those outside ideas, because we just don't. I have no idea what people are going to say or do. As far as individual limits and individual contributions, I think as long as it's open and equal to both sides to contribute exactly the same amount of money, I don't see a problem with that. Nobody's bought and paid for. I'm certainly not. I've had donors who expected to see big new projects happen in certain areas of the district that just don't happen, because it's not about what their money is. It's about those dollars getting the message out and the right decision being made after it. So you have to have some faith in your legislators to know that they're going to be good people up front, that they're not, you know, bought and paid for by any means, and that they're just going to do the right thing when the right time comes. So I think, you know, our system is equal and fair to both sides.
Don't buy it.
Thank you so much for your call, Brett. Dave Gorski, on your Facebook page, you say public schools are the bedrock of democracy. Mm-hmm. And I believe that publicly funding private schools is detrimental to our public schools, causing division and strife among our citizens. Mm-hmm. Given the opportunity, how do you envision a strong public education system in our state?
Well, we know it works in public education. You need highly qualified, highly trained teachers to begin with. It shouldn't be easy to be a teacher. You need to keep the class size down. We see that in our SAGE program in grades 1 through 3, where we try to keep the class size between 15 and 18. That's why Wisconsin has the second best third grade reading scores in the country. And as we see money shifted from the public schools to private schools, we're seeing class size go up. We also need a lot of opportunities for our kids. You know, that's why we have public schools, because the whole community contributes so we can have a tech ed room, so we can have a band room, so we can have chorus, so maybe we have a swimming pool, so maybe we have a hockey rink. And when we take money away from the public schools, we're taking opportunities away from our kids. What I see nationwide is there is a movement to defund public schools, which makes it harder for them to do their jobs, which gives an excuse to close them down. So quite simply, defund, destroy, replace, happening all over the country.
Scott.
So, you know, the benefit of being a legislator is you get to use numbers from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, and you get to lean on them to say exactly what the situation is and what it isn't. The bottom line realistic numbers that come in would tell us that Wisconsin Rapids, Wautoma, Adams Friendship, Nakusa, all those school districts would lose money if the choice program went away entirely. So when my opponent talks about getting dollars into the classroom, the last thing to do is to get rid of the choice program, especially the Milwaukee and Racine programs, which, you know, which are taking students and giving, you know, approximately $6,500 to those districts to educate, you know, privately in those private districts, whereas the public school cost in some of those districts is $12,000 to $13,000 per student. So you take those savings, multiply them out to, you know, between the $6,000 and $12,000 or $13,000, over 20,000 students. That program goes away, every school in the state of Wisconsin is going to lose more money, and that's not what we're about right now. This last budget, the governor wanted to include $200 million more for public education. It wasn't enough, so we fought to the governor for more, and a lot of us in central and western Wisconsin in the Republican caucus decided we couldn't support the budget. There's more that we can do. We've worked on, you know, creating fab labs and giving schools the ability to put in more technical education programs. Some of the bills that I've written in particular is a technical excellence scholarship bill that gives students in high school the ability to get scholarships to tech programs based on their merit, based on the skills that they have. We're working with the Rural Wisconsin Initiative to give teacher loan forgiveness programs for teachers who come out of our UW system as qualified educators to stay in our rural areas for 5 years so we can forgive some of those loans so they can booster up our rural schools. So, you know, when you look at just education as a whole, dollar for dollar, it's not the only discussion. It's about other ideas and concepts that we can do that don't necessarily translate to the almighty dollar, as we've lost a huge chunk of federal funding over the last few years as well, to trying to fill in those gaps of creativity and innovation. All the things we're doing right now fill that need.
Now, you know, you referred to the governor's budget, and one of the reasons, as you just said, that you voted against it is because of the not enough funding in public education. Now, just the year before, the American Federation for Children, which is a pro-school choice or voucher organization, did contribute to your campaign.
Yeah.
as we're on the subject here, how do you balance the public school education with the voucher program, and do you favor expanding the voucher program?
So what we have right now in our voucher program is a system where not more than 1% of the entire enrollment of a school district can be in the private program, in the statewide federal in the statewide program. This last budget decided to take those caps and change that. So when you talk about American Federation for Children being a contributor and donors getting everything they wanted, they voted against everything they wanted in that last budget. So, you know, to balance out those two conversations all in one doesn't always equate to dollar equals vote. It dollar equals what makes sense. So I do favor that we do have a private voucher program in place in the state of Wisconsin, statewide, not necessarily just in our big cities, but everywhere in the state of Wisconsin, because I do think that competition breeds success.
Dave.
Well, yeah. Well, competition should be on equal footing. You don't go in a boxing match where one opponent has his hands tied behind his back. Let me just say a little bit about the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program, which is kind of the epicenter of all of this. You can do this for yourself. Go to the DPI site. Go to the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program. Go to accountability. Look at their test scores. You got schools of 338 kids where nobody reads at a proficient level. Maybe one person does math at a proficient level. Where's the accountability for them? There isn't any. Public schools are subject to the rules of the Elementary and Secondary School Act, otherwise known as Race to the Top. They use that act to close schools down. Once the money goes to a private school, they cannot be closed down. I called the DPI. I says, how does this school keep going? Well, it's a private business. It's a private business operating on public dollars that we have no say over. It's a loss of democracy because once those dollars go to a private school, the public has nothing to say about it and cannot close those schools down. That's wrong. The money belongs in public schools. We should not be funding the religious training of other people. I have nothing against anybody's religion. I know Catholic schools are great. I know Lutheran schools are great. But we got no business paying for other kids' children religious training. I went to a Catholic grade school, but my parents didn't ask for government money to send me there. It's a mission of the church to send their kids to school and provide religious training. We can't afford two systems. Scott is absolutely wrong on the numbers. I've heard him say this before. Wisconsin Rapids has 800 private school students. Every year, over the next 8 years, 1% of the public school district more kids can go. In other words, last year was 40 kids. Mm-hmm. This year it's 80 kids. Pretty soon it's going to be 800 kids. Tell me, how do you pay for the education of another 800 kids and not have it cost more? It doesn't make any sense. Just use logic
and
figure it
out. And that's
why
I voted against that, Dave. That's exactly what I just said. Everything they just said matches what you
just
said
because,
about the
voucher
program.
Because
we do need to have limits.
The voucher program will be uncapped in 2026.
Right.
That's the program. Well, that's what I'm talking about. In 2026, everybody who wants a voucher, if you change the income limits, can get it. That's the truth, Scott. Don't try to manipulate that.
And you left out income limits.
Yeah. What is it, three or four times the poverty rate?
No.
And how many state budgets does it take to change that? That's what the American Federation for Children wants. And Scott got $76,000 in independent spending from them. I don't trust that. That's what I want out of our system. Don't tell me they're giving you $76,000 in independent spending and don't expect anything from you. That's baloney.
If they did, they didn't get it, Dave.
We have a voucher system that will be uncapped in 2026. That's the truth. They got exactly what they wanted. And there's no accountability for these schools. None.
Well, you know, there's plenty of accountability. Every curriculum that every school in the state of Wisconsin has to be approved by DPI.
You can buy it.
That's accountability.
Just buy it. Buy it.
How is that not accountability if every curriculum has to be approved?
It's not accountability because they're not accountable for their test scores. Like the public schools are.
The public schools.
Do they have to hire certified teachers?
Do they have to hire certified teachers?
Can I go into one of those schools as a private citizen because I don't like what they're teaching? They're teaching their kids that I'm going to hell because I'm a Catholic and I pray
the
rosary.
See, that's what you don't understand is that that each parent gets to make that decision for their own child. That's
with
what you're leaving out of the conversation.
With my tax dollars, too. And in Wisconsin Rapids right now, okay, the cost of a voucher at the high school level is $7,856. 61% of that is paid by the state. The remainder is paid by our property taxpayers. That's $3,063.84. Senator Ellis from Neenah called it a backdoor attack on taxpayers because that's exactly what it is. And as we put more and more kids into our private schools in Wisconsin Rapids, the taxpayers are on the hook for more and more money. Talk about that.
You know, it's easy math, and if you'd like the Legislative Fiscal Bureau estimates, I can show them to you, Dave, that the ability of the taxpayer to be protected is there, that we have the three-year rolling averages for each school district in their September counts to make sure that we're protecting them even more as people transition in and out. The biggest problem in our education program right now isn't the vouchers. The biggest problem we have right now is declining enrollment. We're down 20% of our students in Wisconsin Rapids alone. Those equate to huge amounts of dollars that need to be in those districts. And the best way we can get those districts back to those numbers and out of the cycle of declining enrollment is through economic development. And that's what we're going to keep working on, to make sure that our economies are strong, that people are migrating into central Wisconsin instead of leaving, so we have the students in place.
Real quickly, Dave.
Okay, I just want to say I'm glad he mentioned the Fiscal Bureau because I have a number for 2016-2017. It's $258 million. That's what the voucher program's costing this year.
And we're going to go to the phones right now, and we're going to be talking with Bruce from Saratoga, who wants to talk about the University of Wisconsin. Bruce, you're on the air. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question is this. The University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point pays its instructors at the 6th percentile nationally. This makes it difficult to hire and retain the best instructors. And the instructors I know there are really super people, so they're sticking it out for some reason or another. Are you concerned about this situation? And if so, what can be done about it?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start off. That's fine. I think, you know, it's fair to say as we go through university funding and the issues related to that, that, yeah, there have been some cutbacks and there have been some requests to spend down tuition reserves. But in the end, the university budgets across the board are higher than they've ever been before. And that's something that gets lost in the argument. So as we talk about the exchanges or the changes in the dollars that are coming in or going out, the budgets are still all-time high. One of the things that we look for to help the university system is to make sure that if those dollars are coming out of GPR, that we do some other creative and innovative things as well. So one of the things we did this last session was the differential tuition program. To make sure that as the sections opened up and closed, that students had an opportunity to get into those top bottlenecked courses so they can graduate on time. The instructors are still there in the high-demand fields. We're trying to make sure that also that the facilities are in place. And we just got a new $40 million chemistry science building for the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. That doesn't happen if we don't have good qualified staff that run an excellent program. We don't just build buildings and universities without good staff in place. So, when it comes to some of those discussions, those are definitely things that the next state budget will deal with. And I think, as we go through in the next state budget, we try to make sure that we can keep the UW education affordable and make sure that students who, like myself in 1996 at University Stevens Point, who had an $1,100 tuition bill, don't see that tuition bill now go to $3,800. So, to equate that the next 10 years, if I had a $3,800 tuition bill right now and the rate of increase over the 1990s and early 2000s, I'd be paying over $11,000 a semester. So we've put in a four-year tuition freeze to make sure that it's even more affordable to go and get a University of Wisconsin education, to make sure that students can afford it, make sure families can afford it, and to make sure that, a parent like me who's got three or four kids who are going to be in college all at the same time all have the opportunity to go to university education.
And Dave, you've said that you want to help find additional ways to exploit our world-class university system and developing innovation that lead to more jobs for Wisconsinites. How do you see the possible fix to the situation with respect to budget, to college debt, or so on?
Well, I think we have to stop throwing away money. And this $58 million in vouchers is one example. The other example is we should have taken the Medicaid money to apply with Obamacare. I believe that's $700 and some million dollars over the last 4 years or so. We should have taken the money for rural broadband, $24 million. We reject that on ideology. I just think we need to reprioritize how we're spending money in this state. We need to fund our university system. We can't keep paying our professors at the 6th percentile nationally. We're losing them. UWSP lost a really good genetic biologist. We lost a nanotech guy. We lost one of the best music people in the area. And that's for all of our four-year universities and our flagship university. Our professors don't feel like they're respected. They don't think they're paid that well. They're worried about their research projects. We're like a sinking ship. We have to turn it around. The University of Wisconsin-Madison is responsible for 50% of all new jobs over the last decade. Our university system is the greatest engine of job creation in the state. That's a horse we got to ride.
That's why I'm glad they still have the same budget, just different sources.
Bruce, thank you so much for your call. You're listening to Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rick Ryer, talking with candidates for the Wisconsin 72nd Assembly District, incumbent Republican Scott Krug and Democrat Dave Gorski. We'll be right back.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells, indoor water parks and theme parks, entertainment and boat tours. More is at wisdells.com and on the Wisdells To Go app. Wisconsin Dells, the water park capital of the world. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer. Thanks for listening today. We are with Scott Krug and Dave Gorski, candidates for the 72nd Assembly District here in Wisconsin. We're going to go right back to the phones with Bill in Wisconsin Rapids. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Rick, Scott, Dave. This is Bill from Saratoga. My question is going to be about family care. Now, as I'm sure both of the candidates are aware, family care is a community-based program that saves the state money by people being able to care for aged, disabled people at home. So my question is this. There's been talk about privatizing family care and closing down community offices in favor of regional offices. Doesn't seem like a good idea to me, but I'd like to hear both candidates come.
Dave, why don't you start?
Well, I know about this because my wife unfortunately passed away of Alzheimer's, and today is the anniversary of her death. But we use the family care program, and it is a community-based program. Every family that's part of it has a nurse and a social worker that come to the house and meet with the family once every 3 months. And I can tell you, as my wife went down, she would decline a few months at a time. And I could call them up and say, wow, look, this is going on. And they would offer me some more help. And these people work in our communities, these social workers, these nurses, they work in our community, live in our community, and they spend money in our community. And it's a program that works. I went to three different listening sessions to speak out for this program, and about a third of the people were there because of the same reason. They wanted to save family care. I mean, the way I see it, if you regionalize it and turn it over to an insurance company, you've changed the program because it is community-based. So, it really angered me that was attempted. It didn't happen, but I'm afraid it's going to come back up again in the next legislative session.
Scott?
It shouldn't come up in the next legislative session because I passed a bill last session that the governor signed into law that dealt specifically with the current MCOs we have in the 58 Wisconsin counties, with the 30,000 enrollees and the 1,400 small businesses that participate, to protect them into Family Care 2.0 and to give them all equal access into being part of the program, to allow them to consolidate as corporations if they need to change their articles of corporation, to make sure that anything that happened in the budget that I voted against didn't apply to them. So all of the current MCOs that we're going to be dealing with in central Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, west central Wisconsin, all who I've been a private contractor with in the past, who I've known very well, worked with their enrollees, that They're all protected under the bill that we wrote last session that the governor signed into law.
And we're wrapping up out of time, and I'm going to give you each 60 seconds to provide a closing statement, and we'll start with you, Scott.
All right. Thank you. Just once again, I want to thank you, Rick, and WPR and Route 51 for having us here. I want to extend my wishes for Glenn's speedy recovery as well. He's in my thoughts and prayers. And just a message back to the folks of Central Wisconsin. You know, we're working absolutely as hard as we can on critical economic development issues, on protecting our groundwater and environmental resources. I live in the town of Rome. I mean, everything that is near and dear to the folks in Rome is right on, you know, right on my sleeve. I wear it right out there. So we're making sure that we're doing the absolute best that we can. When we have to fight the head, you know, the headwinds of politics, sometimes it slows us down. But we're still making achievements on a regular basis between, you know, the skyward and economic development issues, the local transportation issues, and all the other things that people think is important to Central Wisconsin and the 72nd District in particular. Those are all things that we're working really hard to get done on a daily basis. So I ask you for your support on November 8th.
Thank you. Dave.
Yeah, well, I think you should vote for me because I'm a hardworking guy. I'm going to show up at your meetings. I'm not going to work another job. I'm going to look at this job as a 1.5 position. I do care about clean water. I am a reasonable person. I also support agriculture. I just think we all need to be good neighbors. The voucher program is ruining public education in this state. Our university has been hurt. Our tech schools have suffered. We can no longer fund our state parks. I mean, I'm running because those things really bother me. And I don't care about money. I don't care about power. I'll be 62 years old a month after I'm sworn in. This is not a career for me. I'm on a mission. So if you want a really honest person that'll fight for the people of the 72nd, vote Dave Gorski on November 8th.
Thank you both for being with us today. This is Route 51, and we're out of time.